Employees of the Ocean Service, text number 43. Yada Veda Gyanitina Bhakti Yogena Yogina
Bhakti Yogena Yogina
Sivaya Padamulam Ne
Sivaya Padamulam Ne
Kavisam Chakutuvayam
Kavisam Chakutuvayam
Jnana
Jnana
The knowledge
Vairagya
Vairagya And renunciation Yuktena Equipped. Bhakti Yogena.
Bhakti Yogena.
By devotional service.
By devotional service.
Yogina.
Yogina.
The yogis.
The yogis.
Ksemaya.
Ksemaya.
For eternal benefit.
For eternal benefit.
Padamulam.
Padamulam.
Feet.
Feet.
Ne.
Ne.
Mai. Pravisanti
take shelter of
Akuttabayam
without fear.
Translation. The yogis equipped with transcendental knowledge and renunciation and engaged in devotional service for their eternal benefit take shelter of my lotus feet. And since I am the Lord, they are thus eligible to enter into the kingdom of God without fear. Purport. One who actually wants to be liberated from the entanglement of this material world and go back home, back to God, is actually a mystic yogi. The words explicitly used here are yuktena bhakti yogena. Those yogis are mystics who engage in devotional service are the first-class yogis. The first-class yogis, as described in Bhagavad Gita, are those who are constantly thinking of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. These yogis are not without knowledge and renunciation. To become a bhakti yogi means to automatically attain knowledge and renunciation. This is the consequent result of bhakti yoga. In the Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, it is also confirmed that one who engages in the devotional service of Vasudev, Krishna, has complete transcendental knowledge and renunciation, and there is no explanation for these attainments. Ahaituki, without reason they can come. Even if a person is completely illiterate, the transcendental knowledge of the scriptures is revealed unto him simply because of his engagement in devotional service. That is also stated in the Vedic literature. To anyone who has full faith in the Supreme Personality Godhead and the spiritual master, all the imports of the Vedic literatures is revealed. He doesn't have to seek separately. The yogis who engage in devotional service are full in knowledge and renunciation. If there is a lack of knowledge and renunciation, it is to be understood that one is not in full devotional service. The conclusion is that one cannot be sure of entrance into the spiritual realm in either the impersonal Brahmajyoti effulgence of the Lord or the Vaikuntha planets within that Brahman effulgence, unless he is surrendered into the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. The surrendered souls are called Akuttabaya. They are doubtless and fearless, and their entrance into the spiritual kingdom is guaranteed. Om Jatyamasya Vinna Sankhya Chakshur Nitamya Tasmai Sri Gurveda. So Jnana Vairagya Yuktena, we must establish that connection with Jnana and Vairagya. These two qualities are certainly required in spiritual life. Ignorance is the cause for suffering in this world. Ignorance is the cause for sinful activity. And therefore, knowledge is essential, not just any knowledge, but particular knowledge about devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotional service itself is revealing transcendental knowledge from within the heart. It is not merely that through an intellectual process one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, knowledge will be revealed from within the heart as we are acting in devotional service. But in order to act in devotional service, it takes preliminary knowledge. So some level of knowledge is required. When devotional service is being performed without knowledge, that devotional service becomes very difficult to maintain. Therefore, we require to understand why we are serving Krishna. So much is made of taste these days. Again and again, when we are discussing the need for engaging in devotional service, then we hear the argument being presented, we need taste. If there is no taste, how can we be motivated? But taste is not the only requirement, knowledge. Knowledge, where taste fails, knowledge kicks in. Right? So, if we have sufficient knowledge, then we understand what to do and what not to do. Then we understand how to act. Then we understand what is beneficial. Then we will not engage in some foolish act. Of course, it is said, Balaram Indriyan Gramo Vivamsama Vikarsati, that the senses are so strong that even a man of knowledge may struggle. He also will struggle. And therefore, the first half of that verse is saying, Matra Swasa Duitava Vivektasano Bhavit, that one should not sit in a secluded place even with his own mother or his daughter. So that brings in the element of renunciation, that one must renounce the sense objects, and that if one is placing himself in compromised situations with the sense objects, then even a man of knowledge can very easily fall down. In other words, renunciation of the sense objects, where possible, is favorable in spiritual life. Of course, these two, jnana and vairagya, are described to be helpful in the beginning stages of spiritual life. In the beginning stages of spiritual life, we are actually not on the transcendental platform. Although devotional service is transcendental, although the association we are in is transcendental, the process is transcendental, and so on, we are surrounded by transcendental aspects of the Lord's mercy, still, we are not so transcendental. And that is the problem. So then, jnana and vairagya are relevant, because through them, we can be situated in the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness is in many ways clearly reflecting the spiritual platform. The values of the mode of goodness are parallel to the values in spiritual life. The values in the mode of passion are sometimes conflicting spiritual principles, whereas the values in the mode of ignorance are simply causing great disturbance and distress and misery and so on. So we depend on the mode of goodness for the time being. A devotee, therefore, is regularly trying to associate with the mode of goodness. Srila Prabhupada also makes that point that he doesn't speak about merely cultivating the mode of goodness, but he speaks about associating with the mode of goodness, which is a nice point. That when we are talking about goodness, not that we are trying to be in goodness, I'm trying so hard to be in goodness. That is a passionate attempt. We're trying to be in goodness. We have to be more in goodness. But associating with the mode of goodness will result in gradually that the mode of goodness also develops within us. Therefore, we require a basis in our spiritual life where we associate with the mode of goodness. And as part of that program, jnana and vairagya are very important, very helpful. And therefore, they are helpful for all. The entire Varnashram society is based on that principle. As we are studying our Isupanishad, we came to the principle of Isarasya, where the Supreme Lord is the proprietor. And what is stressed is that everyone should simply accept the Supreme Proprietorship of the Lord and that everyone has a quota, and one should be satisfied with his quota. And the quota is defined as simply what is adequate to keep body and soul together. So that's not much. I mean, it may be becoming a little more over the years. A little more facility may be there as one is aging. That could be. And we see that this harsh kind of renunciation which one may have at a younger stage in life, where one is pushing himself. It's very interesting to see how much people push themselves in a movement like ours. Right? What we impose upon ourselves, all kinds of things, all kinds of austerities we impose upon ourselves, all kinds of goals we set upon ourselves, actually, that are not so required. Because ultimately, jnana vairagya are not going to give us love of God. They are not sufficient to bring us to the transcendental platform. All the renunciation of the world cannot bring one to the platform of attachment to Krishna. So the renunciation is only a preliminary arrangement which creates a favorable condition for engaging in devotional service. And at the point where renunciation is no longer favorable there for devotional service, there it should not be accepted. Like if I have to sleep without a blanket, it's very renounced, but I might after that not do very much service, to give one example. Very simple, and so on. If we have to go into the forest to get our firewood, we can do that. Okay? But possibly after that, we want to sit down for an hour to recover, from hard labor. Right? And so there's other things we will not do then. So each lifestyle brings with it also a certain need for rest and so on. So we are living in a modern time, and in terms of our facilities, it's not so austere. We have a thermostat instead of firewood. Yeah? We can so easily control the temperature, the water is warm, the bed is soft, it's really nice and warm and cozy, and there is no such thing as like the hardships of the weather so much. Nothing like what used to be, obviously. Modern man is very cushioned like that. So that's all right. That's good. But that should then be used. The energy that we gain should be used for Krishna consciousness. For cultivating Krishna consciousness. Anyhow, Vairagya, however, is obviously essential. We have to renounce sinful activities. We have to renounce sense gratification. If we don't renounce sense gratification, then we cannot make spiritual advancements, no matter what. Then we will remain bound to the material energy. So renunciation is a must for all. And therefore, in all ashrams, there must be some spirit of renunciation. And the grihasthas are meant to be very charitable. Very charitable. That is like the traditional system. I saw two friends, and one took sannyas, the other was a grihastha. And when the sannyasi came back, he said, "I want your tape recorder." Big tape recorder. He said, "What?" He said, "Yes, I'm a sannyasi. You can't refuse." So they had a big argument, actually. Right? "This is outrageous. You're taking advantage." But in the end, he gave the tape recorder to the sannyasi. Names were held. But true story. So what can we say? These are proper Vaishnava dynamics, where the grihasthas are meant to give in charity. They're meant to give. That's their purification. That's the means to practice Vairagya in the grihastha ashram. Like that, for the various ashrams, there are prescribed duties. The brahmacharis, they must simply be humble servants. And that is their means of renunciation. It's a very renounced platform to be a servant. It's not so easy. One has to constantly put his own agenda aside. Very difficult. And the sannyasis and vanaprastas, they're practicing austerities. These austerities are a little different, especially in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. In the Vedic model, we may see that vanaprastas and sannyasis are living quite simple, similar, sorry, because they are both residing in the forest, turning away from the world, simplifying life, performing great austerities and so on. But sannyasis also do some preaching. But in our movement, the austerity has become the preaching. Yeah? Of course, preaching is nectar, but like how much nectar can anyone take? So the quantity is the problem. So therefore, practically, how much austerity can one take? When there is so much output, so much activity. So that is the austerity in our movement, in the sannyasa ashram. Preach until you drop, right? Or just stop before you drop, kind of. That is the reality. I don't know if that is the desired standard, but I think that really, that is the reality. And I'm not just speaking from my own personal model, because one can fill in the model in different ways, but I was just having a lunch with Vitapaji Maharaj in Antwerp, and the whole mood was like, he said, "Yes, we also, are worth something. We also are worth something. We also have a right to live, right? We also have a right for, a little bit of air, just a little bit. We also have a right for a few square meters and possibly even some things on there that we like, even like maybe a little corner in this world, yeah? And so on and so on. So this mood is developing in many in the renounced order in our movement, who are feeling the constant demand of a society, the all-devouring, and so on, right? The all-devouring international society for Krishna consciousness. That is certainly something to consider. So, one of the things to renounce is our own desire to be a great devotee. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada made this point, yeah, that says that it's not required to desire to be a great devotee, just try to be a devotee. Yeah. Just try to be a devotee. Yeah. In other words, we are not here trying to diminish the standards. But the point is, we have to be what we are. And a great personality is very rare. If you see what great personalities did not produce, someone like Madhavacharya, I mean, the volumes of work, right, the commentaries and so on, it's just inconceivable. Even Sankaracharya, what he did not comment on, to keep up with that, inconceivable. And how did he manage? Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if you see what they achieved, how much output these great personalities, and then if we see how little we achieve, right? It's like life is moving along, and then we say, yeah, What have I achieved? What have I done? How significant was my life? Right? Another anonymous tombstone. You know? Norman Nescio. Okay? You know? Another person, insignificant personality who didn't make any difference. Right? Whether he was here on the planet or not. Is that me? I guess. From my perspective, I would think so. Maybe slight significance due to being part of a transcendental movement. But in whatever service I've done in this transcendental movement, may have had some value, but it wasn't my idea in the first place. He just asked me to do it. And then I did it, and I got the glory. But if I wouldn't have done it, surely somebody else would have done it. Nah, the job would have gone. Some people say, like in my case, some people say, Dittamaya Pur Samadhi. Okay, I did some work on it, but if I wouldn't have done it, someone else would have done it. So, the point of the matter here is that we don't make such a big difference in the fate of the world. And in fact, whatever service we have been allowed to do, that was our good fortune. That was our good fortune. And in this way, for most of us, we are not going to be a great, significant personality that changed the earth, right? We are simply going to be fortunate, and on the way, we may make a little bit of a contribution. And therefore, we need to become very certain that we take shelter. In the beginning, when one gets involved with Krishna consciousness, day by day one experiences that he makes spiritual advancements. Right? Now I'm following four regulated principles. Now I'm chanting 16 rounds. Now I'm chanting 25. Yeah. Now I've read the Bhagavatam. Now I've got a Bhakti Shastri. Now I'm making progress. Now I'm two initiations. Now I'm, and it is all very measurable and very clearly defined how we are advancing in spiritual life. But then with time, we notice that in spite of all these things, actually, I'm full of anattas. In spite of all these attributes, neck beads, right, in different sizes, some even have the leaves with the mantra around their neck, kavachas, the string or ring, you know, pavitras, I mean, what not, right? What not, you know? All the attributes we have, and in spite of all the attributes, certificates, and other everything else we have achieved, my service record, my reputation, everything, gradually brings us to the point that underneath it all, still the sinful tendencies are there within the heart, still on our toes. Have we really changed? How much have we changed? I had some discussion with Ravindra Sarut about that some time ago, and he said, I don't think anybody actually changes. Does anyone change? Have you changed? He said, no. I haven't really changed. In my case, I can say I haven't changed a bit. Nothing at all from the day I came. Still the same. Still all the same character traits. Stubborn, independent, right? Rebelling against authority. Not so openly, but more internally. Yeah? I mean, I'm not the one to write books, you know, about our mission and so on, you know, that I have to, be against something. Some people just always have to be against something. I don't have that problem so much. But I definitely don't like to surrender to other people's ideas. I have a particular, since my childhood, right? I have a particular inborn resistance. Right? This goes very deep. Right? I mean, and I've always been very strong about that, right? With my mother, with anyone, right? Systematically. And then I kind of, the day I joined the society and shaved my hair, I kind of had a very noble vision of myself, how I was now surrendering my life. And, now looking back at how many years ago that is, and although I maintained it, you know, I kept on cutting the lawn religiously and never let it grow back to, the wild garden that it was before. But, even in spite of that, underneath, I buried my bones. And as from time to time, the dog goes into the garden to dig up his treasures. That lower part of myself still has certain inclinations. Yeah. What can be said? What can be done? Is this destined to be? Of course, I take shelter now of knowledge. Knowledge helps a lot in this respect. Because that's one thing I've got. I haven't changed, but I've got a lot more knowledge. And that helps me to deal much better with these things. Now I see it all in a totally different perspective. What before, the all in all, now is clearly defined and limited. Now I can see the end of desires. I can see now, through knowledge, that certain dreams are futile dreams and not worth even investing in. So I don't, just on the strength of knowledge. Just like in Bhagavad Gita in that verse, Apuryamana Achala Pratistam Apasabhuda Bhavitanti Yatvat Tatut Kamali Bhavitanti Sarve. We find in that verse, I also mentioned it in the last lecture because I've been meditating on this verse lately. But in that verse, basically, the interesting part of the verse is that it describes that as long as one is embodied, the desires will naturally be there. And simultaneously, it says, however, one is the one who has achieved Krishna consciousness. He's not affected. Right? So it's there, but he's not affected. It's very interesting because whatever seems to be there seems to be kind of affecting us in a way. I mean, many times we have this concept of one must be free from a trace of desire, right? And the slightest trace of desire that can be found with a microscope means that a person is fallen, that a person is sinful, conditioned, blah, 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 and not transcendental, and under the modes, and therefore tied by the three gunas. Guna means mode, but it also means a rope, and therefore that he is simply false. It's not a false platform. He's simply acting out as if he's on a platform, but in reality he's not. Right? See, all that. Yeah? I mean, I get a headache just acting out the part. So much energy and intensity goes in this. Right? Books are written, websites are created, magazines are out, are sent around the world, unasked for. Right? And you get one again in your letterbox and you wonder, what am I supposed to do with this thing? Right? There's only one solution. Fire, fire, fire. what can be said? Yeah? Burn. Then Apuyamanam Achala Pratistam gives a different model, gives a model where these tendencies are there. The tendency not to surrender, right, which I started off with, which I can definitely count as one of the rivers flowing into my consciousness. One of the rivers is maybe the Ganges, you know, it's huge, right? The Padma, right, which comes into the ocean, or the Mississippi, something like one of the world's big rivers, the tendency to be independent. And yet, again and again, one has to give up this independence in the light of knowledge. In the light of knowledge today, I have to again give up my independence. I didn't entirely give it up yesterday, but I gave it a try. And again, today, I have to again try and give up this independence. And really, like, become the instrument. And in this way, transcendental knowledge is safeguarding us. And again, on the basis of transcendental knowledge, chant that holy name. Right? Whether one chants the holy name out of sheer ecstasy, that it flows out of one's mouth, right? Because of the love in one's heart, or whether one chants the holy name as one's dear shelter, right? As a shelter that is very dear to us, as a shelter that that we trust in. The essence is to take shelter. So how far do we have to take it to become advanced in bhakti yoga and to become eligible to enter into the kingdom of Godhead without fear? Here it is stated, pravisanti akuto bhayam, which is referring to that state where we can become eligible to enter into the kingdom of God without fear
Svapamapi asya dharma shittaite mahatu bayat.
The most dangerous type of fear that is identified is the fear to again take birth in the material world.
So that's the fear I want to discuss. If we speak without fear, I'm not interested now to address all the other phobias and so on that might be there. But this fear, how can we become free from that fear that we may have to take birth again? From that anxiety that maybe I'm not going to make it. Maybe I'm not going to be successful this lifetime. Some people really take it too far. If one simply is taking shelter, it is said, Nakam Kame is a Sintiya Nuti. It is said that a person who is not acting upon the influx of desires and simply continues in devotional service, Sasantiya Nuti. One who does not give in to sense gratification, Sasantiya Nuti, he will attain peace. So this is the state without fear. Fear means no peace. Kamsa had no peace. Not for a moment. Kamsa couldn't sleep, Kamsa couldn't walk, Kamsa couldn't sit. Always in anxiety. So this anxiety problem, to be in anxiety, constantly in anxiety about something. How many people are constantly in anxiety? So without fear that we simply are situated properly, that's possible if nakama kami, if we are not into sense gratification. That's it. So it is not so difficult. One simply does not act. And one must therefore have engagement. Not renunciation of sense gratification and no engagement. Prabhupada says, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. So if there's no engagement, then one will certainly fall down. It is not possible. Rather, it is on the strength of engagement in devotional service that we are able to do it. So, whatever desire internally may come up to its sense gratification, one simply doesn't identify with it. Just like sometimes someone asks this question, what do you do when you are strongly attacked by sex desire? What do you do? The answer, nothing. That's the answer. That's the best answer. The best answer is nothing. Absolutely nothing. Let it come and it will go. That's the best. When you feel, no, but that's not possible. That's really not possible. I have to do something. Okay. Then we give second best instruction. Then if you have to do something, then at least according to religious principles. But better do nothing. But if you have to do something, all right, do something. But do it according to religious principles. Otherwise, then of course if someone says, yeah, well I can't do that either, okay, then we have Bhagavad Gita 8 to 12. We have to be kind of, don't worry, just go on, still be engaged, Whatever you do, don't stop your service, it's alright. It's just mentioned to me that, like, about gays, being gay is quite fashionable these days. And also in ISKCON, we have not been spared. Yeah? And of course, it was also going on in Prabhupada's time. And so someone said that one particular devotee had that tendency and he was kind of pushing strongly. with Srila Prabhupada that really he couldn't do it. So there is a rumor that Prabhupada at one point said, all right, then have a boy, right? Then he saw a boy and go on. Now, whether Prabhupada said it or not, that we don't know for a fact, right? Some are saying he did, and many of us are doubting he did. But even if for argument's sake, he would have said it, so what? Yeah? That's just Bhagavad Gita 8 to 12, you know? Okay, you know, be a dog, but at least be a devotee dog, yeah? You know? If that's what you have to be, if you have to be a dog, at least continue some devotional service. That doesn't at all suddenly mean that dogs will also go back to Godhead. Yeah? Generally, dogs don't go back to Godhead. Yeah? They're very nice and so on, but they don't go back to Godhead. That's the point. So, if we want to be dogs, then alright. Then we have to also pay the price. Another birth. And then we've missed the boat. You should not, then we don't need any justification, but it's all right, and Prabhupada said treaty of prakriti, and all this kind of, you know, and try and make some paper, right, about it. Right? No, dog is dog, right? It's called spade is spade, right? And that's all. And ultimately, it is not social narrow-mindedness that we are condemning. We are simply condemning anything that is an obstacle on the path back to Godhead. And we condemn it wholeheartedly, with full fervor, and with thunderbolts and everything with it, yeah, as strong as we can. Yeah? Worse than the worst conservative, when we get into condemning these things. Because we have knowledge. The conservative may condemn such things because it's like socially strange and so on, right? This is like, you know, not human, this is like subhuman and all kinds of things. We are taking a step further and saying it's dog life. It's dog life where the genital is a regular focus of the attention. And where does the nose of the dog go? And that's it. And that means deeply entangled in the modes of material nature. So, in this way, apuyamanam achala patistam is the state, sasanti apnoti, where one can be sure that he is eligible to enter into the kingdom of Godhead, and where one can be without fear. That is the transcendental plan. Of course, there are other levels, and I like to mention Uddhava's example, who saw this beautiful young girl and was attracted to the young girl, and was thinking, how can I be attracted to a girl like that? As if it's Krishna. Yeah? I think it's Krishna dressed up like a girl, and it was. Yeah. So that's another level. Yeah? That's another level. And whether we'll ever attain that level here in the material world, I don't know. Okay? That may not be attained here in the material world. But whatever, I don't think that will hold us back, because somewhere on the way, the Lord will make some arrangements. Yeah? And whether that means we go to another universe to enter into the pastimes of the Lord, to be purified from the last anaritas, or whether Lord Chaitanya just, with a smile, takes it back on one moment. That can be debated by various scholars and theologians of the Hare Krishna movement, who can send many emails and who can write papers and so on. And that's a good way to kill the time, and in a Krishna conscious way. But personally, I am a practical person and I have good things to do, so I have got no time for this discussion. Not saying that philosophical refining a philosophical point. has no value for the scholars amongst us. I saw a raised eyebrow. But the bottom line is, in the Gopala Tapana Upanishad, it is stated that Krishna is beyond ignorance and he is beyond knowledge as well. Which I like that statement. I thought it's quite interesting. So ultimately, just knowledge alone will also not do the job. It simply depends on mercy, and that mercy must be attracted by devotional service. Therefore, at one point, we have to stop nitpicking over some philosophical, theological point, and at one point, we have to just get very serious about devotional service. Of course, when they say, but for some, that is their service. All right, then. For those, it's okay. But for us, we don't really care. You know, like, every once in a while, someone has to dust off the old, where did the jiva fall from, and, you know, and bring it out again, as if it's fresh, right? And we just say, don't worry about it, just leave it on the shelf. It doesn't matter. Right? Like my spiritual master said, from Cincinnati, right? Which is like a city in America, Cincinnati, a sinful place. So that answer basically means, like, who cares? Who cares where the jiva came from? Who cares? Okay. We couldn't care less. Okay. The moon, you know, the moon, right? What about the moon, right? And I remember that in Amsterdam there was a certain devotee who likes to ask questions to a point where it drives the speaker nuts, right? And this devotee kept on asking his questions about the moon, the moon, the moon, and finally the answer was, yes, the moon is made of green cheese. This also means, like, who cares about the moon, you know? We couldn't care less about the moon, right? I mean, we totally not interested in the moon, you know? I mean, the whole moon, right? As far as we are concerned, you know, Mr. Moon, goodbye, you know? I mean, we want Krishna, no moon, right? The moon is like the deity of the mind, right? It's all mental stuff, right? The moon, right? So all that worrying about all these things, right? What about this? What about that? Just, alright, you know. Prabhupada told one devotee who got so much into Sanskrit spokas, why don't you do something useful, man? Right? Sweep the road, you know. Yes. So we also say, why don't we do something useful? Right? Something useful to, while we are still alive, right? Such a short life, why don't we do something useful? Distribute a book. Give some mercy to a conditioned soul. Do some preaching, ultimately. That's the most important thing. Stop. Questions come. Yes?
You were talking about renunciation.
Yeah.
And, well, if I were to renounce all the bad things in me, then eventually I wouldn't exist.
If you would renounce all the bad things?
Then eventually I wouldn't exist. So where's the good things that's going to replace the bad things? If I was cutting away the picture of a rakshasa, and each time I cut a piece away, I would see a counterpoint. Then I would see that the renunciation was producing some fruit. So where's the fruit when I renounce something?
Krishna keeps it in his pocket. I mean, there is no doubt that that if we renounce for Krishna, that is not an ordinary thing. Srila Prabhupada also points that out, that those who are actually renouncing a household life for the pleasure of Krishna, they are certainly getting the personal attention of Krishna. So to get the personal attention of Krishna is a desired thing. And so it is not just something to worry about. After all, one who has knowledge of Krishna consciousness, he knows that Nitya Siddha Krishna Bhakti Santi Kabunai Sarvanani Sudha Chitta Karyodai. The spiritual identity is there. It is underneath that Rakshasa. There's no doubt about it. Renunciation is favorable because it can, it does several things. We detach our mind from sense objects, and in that way, the agitation of the mode of passion diminishes, and we also free ourselves from entanglement with the modes of material nature, with the sense objects which preoccupy our whole being. So in this way it's favorable. And then the essence, with that which will reveal Krishna to us, is devotional service. Therefore, even if one doesn't renounce so much, one can still go back to Godhead if he is deeply absorbed in devotional service. So there is a model. There are so many models given, and in one model, one can go along with his wife to a holy place and just spend the end of his life there. That can either be at a temple and live a simple life and a normal sex life and so on. That's possible, and one can stay together. And it's not an impediment for going back to Godhead, but then one must fill that position with devotional service. Otherwise, of course not. So that what will reveal the siddha sarup, the spiritual body, is not renunciation. That is devotional service. Renunciation is only there as a preliminary to help that devotional service. That's all. But there is power. There is no doubt. It's not that it's that the difference between one ashram and another ashram is gray. It's not that it's like almost the same. It's just another variety of the same thing. I don't think so. From my experience, I think it's a difference of night and day. I really think so. I think it's a difference of night and day. I think it's quite a difference, the differences in ashram. So that's just something in favor of renounced ashrams. They definitely have a tendency to increase the spirituality in one's life, without a doubt. That I must, it's not to be underestimated. At least the spiritual focus increases a lot. So, something to say for it. But not a prerequisite for going back to Godhead. To be absorbed in devotional service. That's it.
Well, as devotees of our nature, very humble. And as you also mentioned, you haven't made any progress since you've been in the movement. But isn't it also that devotees are sometimes very hard on themselves? Like, we actually, all of us, made a lot of advancement before we tried to increase lust, now we're trying to decrease it. And we're following some principles that the Prabhupada says this is the human life.
Mm.
So isn't it actually we made less advancement, but advancement, but there's more to come?
Mm. In most cases I would say that's true. In my case, though, I cannot say that I did change a bit. But fortunately, I've got all this mercy now, in the form of transcendental knowledge, in the form of blessings of Vaishnavas, in the form of initiations and vows, and so on, in the form of association, in the form of friends who are exalted, who are kind to me, and so on, in the form of like just peer pressure, Like if I don't come to Mangalarti, everyone will think like, I didn't come to Guru Puja the last 2 days because I'm tired. And I'm trying to save some energy. And these wild kirtans, too many wild kirtans. Probably getting old. Can't do it anymore every day. So the mercy comes in so many ways. So that's making me act in a different way. I don't know if before I was trying to increase lust. I felt that in the material world I was using many things just to survive. I was trying to survive. A little intoxication to deal with the heaviness of life. Yeah? It wasn't like that I loved it so much. Oh, this is great. Yeah. It's just every once in a while, it's too much. Yeah. Or another variety. Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't just a sense of gratification, simply somehow or other surviving a heavy world. Yeah. And I think I wasn't so busy trying to enjoy. Not busy enjoyment, but a lot of it was just surviving. Is everyone in total sense enjoyable? Out there. Finished. Thank you very much.